Book 2. As Above, So Below. Theogonies 2. He was alive. And that stark fact alone surprised him. Cylindrical walls of buckled silver encircled him, a capsule of metal that he had no memory of being placed within. Light streamed through a large tear on one side of the tube, shimmering and inconstant, like sunlight reflected from the surface of a tidal lake. He had never seen a lake, but knew instinctively what one would look like, how the cold waters would feel on his skin, and the sense of freedom that would come from swimming the blue-green depths. He unsnapped a number of trailing cables from his body and turned himself around in the cramped confines of the tube. As he crawled along to the break in the walls, he caught sight of his reflection in the smooth walls of his... his what? His prison? His refuge? Or his home? No, none of those words felt right. His features were those of a powerful man, youthful, but one to whom others would willingly bend the knee. The jaw was square, the hair dark as midnight, his eyes a warm, gold-flecked green. It was the face of a man upon whose shoulders great burdens could be placed without fear of them being unseated. He liked the face, pleased at how it had been wrought. He was naked. But the absence of clothes did not trouble him. He knew nothing of modesty and took a moment to admire the perfection of his godlike physique. He laughed at the vanity of the thought, and with the grin of a man who knows the world is at his feet, pushed at the damaged section of the curved silver walls. The material was soft and pliant to his touch, and he easily bent the honeycomb structure open enough to allow him egress. He boosted himself up and climbed from the reflective interior like a newborn from a glittering chrysalis. He dropped to the ground and stared in wonder at his surroundings. He stood within a vast crater, 100 kilometers wide at least, deep in the belly of what had once been a colossal mountain of black rock and ice. The crater was a forest of spiral-fluted stalagmites, its floor webbed with cracks through which scalding vents of steam billowed and spurts of molten rock jetted. The heat was incredible, and warm rain misted the air, ice as it toppled into the crater, liquid as it fell, steam before it reached the bottom. Towering cliffs soared 1,000 meters above him, and cascades of ice-bearded rock fell into the crater from the splintered rim. Billowing clouds of dust and smoke obscured the sky, and the mountain groaned and shook with seismic tremors. His arrival had caused this. He was sure of it. The walls of the cliffs were a curious mix of translucent ice, embedded metal, and broken structural arches, all veined with millions of silver threads that trembled like imprisoned fireflies. Golden pulses of bioluminescence travelled the network like misfiring synapses in a damaged brain. The glittering light shimmered all around him like newborn suns in a crystal sky. It was quite the most beautiful thing he could ever have imagined. Tearing his eyes from the magnificent vista of the crater, he took a moment to inspect the capsule from which he had emerged. Exactly 9 meters long and crumpled with his terrific impact upon the mountain, its surfaces were stenciled with symbols he did not yet understand and embedded with jewels that winked with their own internal light. Where had the capsule come from? Was its presence here deliberate or an accident? Boxy devices on its upper surfaces trailed a profusion of wires and ribbed tubing. They drooled clear fluids that smelled of chemicals and exotic elements he could not name. His eyes were drawn to a brushed iron plate beneath a circular window ringed with heavy metal seals and thick rivets. Upon the plate was a single letter. X. No, not a letter. A representation of the number 10. And with that recognition came thoughts of others. Were there more like him? He had no recall of any such brotherhood, but knew on the deepest, most primal level that he was part of something greater than himself. United in purpose, vying for primacy, he was strong. Alone, he was nothing. Shaking off a self-pitying sense of loneliness, he studied the crater once again, letting details he had previously glossed over come to the fore. One thing was immediately apparent. This was no natural formation of rock within the mountain, its shape too geometric, and its arrangement too precisely symmetrical to have formed naturally. He watched the play of light through the walls, seeing a pattern in its ostensibly random movement, a pattern that was now disrupted. The heart of that pattern led to the centre of the crater, where he saw hints of an angular structure nestled between the curling stalagmites. He set off towards it, his strides long and sure, confident to the point of arrogance. He closed the distance rapidly, weaving between cracks of superheated gases and bubbling streams of molten rock burping to the surface. The closer he came to the centre, the more cracks split the ground, and the more detours he had to take. As he paused atop a fallen spire, he surveyed the ground close to the structure, now seeing complex concentric patterns cut into the rock around it. He could make no sense of them, sweeping arcs with cursive runic forms between them. They were not language, that much he could tell, but what purpose they served was a mystery. Many were split by the cracks, others still were being burned away by ribbons of liquid rock that hissed and steamed as they oozed from unseen magma vents below. Though he had no conscious knowledge of such things, he knew that this entire crater was in danger of collapsing into a seething caldera of lava, that its stability had rested on the mountaintop remaining intact. The structure itself was a low, boxy thing, apparently solid, with no visible means of gaining entry. It was clearly important. Why else would someone go to the trouble of depositing it in such an inaccessible place? He continued onwards, winding through the stalagmites that thronged the floor of the crater like silent sentinels. He brushed a hand across one as he passed, feeling a tingling charge coursing through it. An electroconductive crystalline lattice, perhaps? He crossed the concentric lines of runic symbols, feeling a strange, prickling sensation as he did so. It invigorated him, as though a wellspring of vitality had opened up inside him. The heat in the crater was rising steadily, and more rocky debris was falling from the rim above. The mountain's flanks were collapsing inwards, like a sculpture of sand being slowly eaten away by the tide. He would need to leave soon, or risk being buried. Eventually he reached the structure at the heart of the crater. As he had suspected, there was no visible means of entry, its walls glossy black and without any seams, joints, or imperfections in its surface. For all intents and purposes, it was a solid block. A stone awaiting a sculptor, a dream waiting to be given form, or a nightmare. A sudden crack echoed like a gunshot, and he backed away as a prescient sense of danger settled in his gut. He saw a forking tracery of silver light crack the featureless stone, moving like an upturned lightning bolt through the block. Another crazed the corner nearest to him, quickly followed by a third. A fourth and a fifth webbed the surface. He knew he should get as far from here as possible, but he had to know what had been hidden in this secret place. More and more cracks were spreading over the structure, linking together and shining phosphor bright. He shielded his eyes as the block radiated light like a supernova. With a final boom, it fell apart, and what lay within was revealed. Through the brilliant mercurial haze of impossibly bright silver light, he saw a form cohering in the radiance. Segmented and coiled, it was a disassembled entity that was only now able to restore its original form. A swirling lattice of architecture and organism, construct and intelligence. It was at once a living thing and an artificially wrought monster. A hideous steel clattering of biomechanical gears and liquid metal rattled through the cavern, an artificial heartbeat and birth shout in one. He saw a huge, worm-like creature uncoiling from its dissolving prison. Hearing that terrible mechanized shriek of release, there could be no doubt that this monster had been imprisoned within this impregnable mountain. Reaching down, he scooped up a sharpened shard of mirror-smooth black rock. A crude weapon, but it would have to do. He stepped out to face the creature, a titanic worm with a ratcheting, segmented body that constantly rotated and reshaped itself with shifting, liquid ease. Its bulbous, arachnid exoskull was wreathed in metallic feelers, a trio of needle-toothed proboscises and multifaceted eyes that reflected a million images of the naked figure before it. The great worm reared up, a towering monster of chromed steel, and loosed a howling bray of machine anger. He leapt to the side as the creature slammed its bulk down, crushing the ruin of its former prison and cracking the ground beneath with its titanic weight. He rolled, burning his skin on the patches of molten rock bubbling up through the cracks. Scalding steam wreathed him, and he bit back a shout of pain. The towering worm slithered towards him, smashing stalagmites from its path and gouging a great furrow in the ground with its weight. With only his shard blade to defend himself, he was under no illusion as to what the outcome of the fight could be. He roared and leapt at the creature, stabbing his obsidian blade into its flanks, but the stone shattered on its glittering armor. It slammed into him, a flexing juggernaut of thunderous, unstoppable metal and power. Silver barbs pierced his skin as he was flung from its path, slicing his chest and shoulders to ruin. He hit the ground hard, the breath punched out of him, his body bruised to the bone. He pushed himself to one knee, ready to face the creature once more. Even weaponless, he would fight it. But it seemed that killing him was of no concern to the worm. It continued over the floor of the cavern, bludgeoning a path through to the cliffs. Again it reared up, and hundreds of grasping, clawed legs extruded from the underside of its body. With sinuous flexes, the worm creature tore its way up the disintegrating walls until it curled around and slithered over the lip of the crater. He stood and watched it go, relieved to be alive, but angry he had failed to kill the beast. He knew nothing of his past, but the power of his body told him he was more than a mere man. He had failed in this first task, and swore to himself that he would not fail again. His arrival had destroyed this mountain prison, however unwittingly, and the responsibility of undoing the damage lay with him. The trail of destruction left by the creature led to the base of the cliff. Its climb had left the rock gouged and torn with hand and footholds, which would make the climb possible. Possible, yet still incredibly dangerous and difficult. With every second he delayed, the worm put ever more distance between them, and so he gripped the cliff face and began climbing. Hand over hand, with the relentless strokes of a machine, he climbed the cliff. It was not an easy climb. The rock had been greatly weakened by the worm's passage. It took 2 grueling hours. But finally he reached the lip of the crater and hauled himself out. His muscles burned with exertion, and his chest heaved for breath. He dropped to his knees, resting his bloodied hands on the ground as he took in great gulps of icy, dust-clogged air. Shards of the worm's scales littered the edge of the crater, and he lifted one, thinking to use it as a weapon. He turned it over in his hands, surprised at how light it was. The edge was razor sharp, and when he caught a glimpse of his reflection, he let out a gasp of surprise. Where once his eyes had been an inviting gold-flecked green, now they were a shimmering silver, like coins placed on the eyes of the dead. He lifted a hand to his face, seeing the web of veins and incandescent blood beneath the skin, the artistry that had gone into their construction, and the miraculous bioengineered wonders encoded within his flesh. Was this a side effect of the worm's attack, or was he now perceiving the world as he had always been intended to see it? Strangely, the sight of his new eyes did not trouble him overmuch, and he rose to his feet with fresh purpose. The worm's passage was impossible to miss, a deep furrow in the mountainside that led north into a shadowy wasteland. Watery light glinted from the creature's distant scales as it fled its former tomb. Beyond the worm, he saw the broken outlines of what looked like a collection of ruined towers, obviously ancient and perhaps belonging to a long-dead, long-vanished culture. The sulphurous skies over the horizon were a striated mess of bruise yellow and infection red. Storm clouds wheeled and clashed, and distant lightning split the air with thunderclap booms. Only a weak, diffuse light broke through the clouds. A smear of light illuminated the southern haunches of the mountain directly below him, and he saw a number of primitive vehicles crossing the southern steppe in the far distance, a great caravan train pulled by mammoth, grey-skinned beasts of burden. The landscape the caravan traversed was barren and hostile. Black sands and rocky hinterlands swept by dust storms and freezing winds, a grim place to call home. They were made tiny by distance, but he could make out bent-backed men, swathed in furs and heavy leather cloaks, driving the mighty beasts. To see other living beings sent a pang of longing through him, a surging relief that he was no longer alone. He wanted to go to them, to learn where he was and who they were, but he had sworn to see the worm creature destroyed. He would not make his first act upon reaching the surface one of oath-breaking. He turned his back on the men of this world and followed the trail of the worm into the cold black sands of the north.